Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Merkel Media.
Good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas, and this is Free the Rabbits, or if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, Free the Cats, because I'm sitting here holding this little guy, Grayson. He's one of the newest members of our family, and I'll tell you a little story about him. Here you go, buddy. You can get down now. I like to donate to the animal shelter when I can, and about 3 months ago, I walked into the shelter, I was dropping some stuff off, and I'll look at stuff that's in the cages, and I saw this little kitten. He's gray and white, and he just looked so cute, and I stuck my finger in there, and he wrapped his little paw around my finger, and the lady that worked there said, "You want to hold him?" I said, "Yeah, I'll hold him," and that was a wrap, and he became the newest member of our family. And he is awesome. Now, you're wondering why I just went into the story about a new cat friend that I have here at the house. So today's episode is going to be about cats. It's going to be about domestic cats, how they came to be, some of the weird conspiracies that go on about domestic cats. Also, we're going to talk about cat men, lion men, all these cat gods in Egyptian culture that also spawned off into domesticated cats, which were a huge part of Egyptian culture. We'll talk a little bit about that and what I think that cats were designed to do or that were DNA manipulated to do for us, or just maybe because of their own DNA composition. We'll get into a lot of that today. I think it'll be a lot of fun. But before we get started with any of that, one thing I didn't do last week on the first episode was get into a little bit about the podcast, where to find this podcast, what I have going on here in the future. Number one, I just want to say thanks to every single person that reached out when the first episode of the podcast dropped. It was pure insanity. Apple started blowing up. Spotify started blowing up. YouTube, tons of comments. Rumble started blowing up. Everything really started moving in a positive direction. And I really appreciate the love, guys, because that's what I'm looking to do with this podcast is help spread love, help spread compassion. We're going to look at these cool things, but we're also going to go outside and touch grass, connect with our neighbor. That's part of what this podcast is going to be about. And it was overwhelmingly positive from everyone that reached out on all the platforms. And I do want to read some comments because I will do that every week. Positive comments only. Any negative comments will just get pushed to the side. We're not trying to push any of that stuff here on this podcast. But I will start with Apple. The best name is Nephilim Portal Baby, which if anyone knows about the Nephilim Portal Baby series I've done, that is where that's from. Joel's podcast is the best podcast ever. On point with the topics. This guy knows what he's talking about. Just listen to it. You won't be disappointed. I appreciate the kind words, Nephilim Portal Baby. I hope that I'm on point with the topics, and sometimes I might not be. Sometimes I might have a differing opinion of what you might have on a topic, but that's okay. That's why we're here, to share ideas and then live life. We've got Brevity and Levity by Atlas Smirks. Trying to rhyme, not sure why I like brevity. That's why I found podcast is there's not enough time in the day to get to the bottom. But long form is excellent. Stoked for the release. Now do necromancers. That is very interesting. You brought up necromancers. That's a great idea. Also, speaking of podcast ideas on Spotify, I will have a section when you go to the episode where you can give me podcast ideas. So if you want to say how much you like the show, cool. But in addition, if you have podcast ideas, I will put those in the bank and add them to stuff that I'm already looking into, already researching. I think that'll be kind of cool if I can get you guys involved with some of this too, because you guys seem like you're ready to get involved and I love it. So we got one more here from Apple. Excited for this show. The great listener is the name. Joel is always a great listen to and mixes comedy along with his thoughts. The show will be epic. Just trying to have fun, guys. This is what the whole point of this is. We're not going to sit here and live in fear and, you know, cry and moan all day long. That's not why we're here. We just want to share ideas. Obviously, look at things that are coming down the pipe, but at the same time, don't let them control us. And it seems like you guys are very much on board with a lot of that right now. I'm going to jump to Spotify. We've got Nikki Split. I enjoyed this first episode. Looking forward to more. I like things that open my mind to think. We've got James Hoberty. Loving the podcast so far, my dude. Glad I'm not the only one who thinks the way you do. Excited for more to come. But most importantly, keep spreading love and kindness. And I've been getting a lot of this from you guys, is spreading the love and kindness. And that's what we're here to do. I just love you guys are on board with this concept of looking into conspiracies, but not letting them control us. And I'm thrilled right now that you guys are on board with this. I'm going to go to YouTube now. We've got John Sergei 9043. Glad to be part of what I like to call the free range rabbits. Excited and definitely tuned in. You know what, John? I'm going to go ahead and make this a thing. Anybody that follows this podcast and loves this podcast is a free range rabbit. That's what we're going to be. FRRs, free range rabbits, because we're not in the rabbit hole. We are out of the rabbit hole and we are spreading love and kindness and connecting to our neighbor. Free range rabbits, that's a done deal. And that is going to be part of the show going forward. Appreciate that, John. We've got Cheryl Divine 42. You're phenomenal. I'll be watching every episode, which, by the way, if you're on Spotify or Apple or any of the other ones like Amazon, if you want to watch the show, you can subscribe to Free the Rabbits on YouTube and Rumble. So you can watch the whole show. I'm here every week, every Friday. And one more from YouTube. We've got Audacious Amber. It's easier to fool somebody than convince them that they're being fooled. Yes, Amber, that is absolutely correct. And that also includes the conspiratorial world. They can be just as fooled as these quote unquote normies that they rail against. I think that's something we have to be aware of. And I'm not going to go into that today because that was last week's episode. But if you haven't listened to last week's episode, go back, listen to the Cast Unseen Effect, and that is going to set the tone for how we're going to go forward with all these conspiracies and all these ideas, because we're just going to share ideas. I'm going to share my thoughts, ideas, and what I think, and at the end of the day, we're going to leave it, go live our lives. Obviously, if it's something we need to incorporate, like, hey, there's something going on here, I need to be cautious and careful for my family, obviously do that. But at the same time, we're not going to live in fear. That's just what they want us to do. And that's why they've made people that go so far in the rabbit hole and conspiracies feel isolated, feel alone. We're not here to feel alone. We're here to connect with everyone around us. And to that point, right now, if you're following me on Apple, if you're following me on Spotify, if you're on YouTube or Rumble, five-star reviews where you can get five-star reviews. Write a review where you can write a review. Apple, I see the followers that have been following me already for a week. It's a lot. You guys can go and spend 20 seconds, five-star review and a comment. That helps the algorithm, helps other people be able to see this podcast, be able to listen to this podcast. Same thing with Spotify. You can't write a comment. Well, you can on each episode that I can see, but what you can do is give a five-star review, which helps the algorithm on Spotify, and it gets out to everyone else. Again, I've seen the amount of people that are following it on Spotify as well. I think every single person that's following it could go give a five-star review. It helps ramp the numbers. It helps other people see it. That's how we get out the information. That's how we connect with other people. YouTube comments, the more comments, the more likes, obviously, is going to run it up in the algorithm. More people are going to see the video. More people are going to share it. That's a good thing. Rumble, same thing. Rumble's always a weird one. That's the one that's always lacking comments because people just don't comment, but they follow and like, comment, subscribe to all of these places. It's very important to growing the show. And I know you guys are here to help me. These free range rabbits, as I am now taking on board for this show. So I need all the free range rabbits to get out there, share the show. That's how we get this out there and we run it up and other people get to see what free range rabbits, what Free the Rabbits is all about. It's going to be fantastic going forward. Also, go to MerkelFilms.com. I'm a part of a team with Tony Merkel that goes around the country. We shoot all these crazy documentaries looking for cryptids, looking for paranormal things. We've got a brand new film that's out right now. You can purchase at MerkelFilms.com called Sasquatch and the Missing Man. It's with Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles. The whole team goes out there. We had some crazy stuff go on out in Washington State. There's two other films as well. There's The Shape of Shadows, where we went out to Skinwalker Ranch hunting down skinwalkers, and Expedition Dogmen, where we went out into the Kentucky woods looking for dogmen. Crazy stuff happened on all those trips. We've got some new documentaries that are in the pipe that we're going to be shooting in the future. Going to be some really cool stuff. Get ready. We're going to be hitting you guys forever with all kind of cool stuff, not just podcasting. Also, for people that have been asking, yes, the song at the beginning of the podcast is me. So I did this intro. I do all the intro music. Also, the song at the end of the podcast is always me. So if you're looking to get to any of my music, you can find me at Joel Thomas Media on YouTube, where I've got music videos now. Go there, like, comment on anything there. It helps run those videos up. Also, you can find me on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, any place you listen to music, you can go find me. Just type in Joel Thomas. You'll find my music pretty much streaming on every platform. Stream it, share it. That's the best way to get out positive music for the world to hear. Because that's one thing I'm trying to do with everything, not just podcasting, but everything, is giving people a positive outlook, on life, and at the same time, being able to listen to something that gives you something more than just the negativity that's going on in the world. All right, guys, we got all that good stuff out of the way. Let's get to the episode. Cats. So I've always been interested in cats. I've always been a big cat fan. Probably like them a little more than dogs. And I know there's people that are big dog fans and they can't stand cats. Cats annoy them. I think for me, what I always enjoyed about cats more than dogs was their ability to be independent. They don't need as much from you. Dogs need everything from you. I guess cats are more like anti the system, where dogs are like what people in the conspiratorial world called normies. You know, they're doing whatever you tell them to do for the most part. But they're also man's best friend. And I've had plenty of dogs growing up and I love dogs too. I'm just making jokes. I think that cats and dogs serve their purpose, but I love cats. And there's an interesting correlation with cats in the paranormal world. We all know about black cats, how they've shown up throughout history. In some cultures, they're considered good luck. In other cultures, they're considered evil. We're not going to get down the black cat rabbit hole today. I'm just using that as a point of reference. But cats are a part of this paranormal or spiritual world. And is there something to it, is the question. Is there something more than just the stories, right? Or people that are involved in Wicca or witchcraft and how they use cats, is there something more to it spiritually? And me as a Christian, is there something that we can look to cats for and say, hey, this is a viable thing? This is something they might be able to do. And I think there's some really cool ideas here with cats, and we're going to go into it today. But I'm going to do a quick little overview about cats. We're going to get into where we first started hearing about them domesticated, because there's a difference between domesticated cats and cats that are large cats or wild cats, because we've known about cats since the dawn of time, but we don't know a lot about the domesticated version of cats, how they became domesticated. Was there some sort of DNA manipulation that changed cats to domesticated? Maybe there's a possibility for that too. We're going to talk about some of that today. Is there such thing as hybrid cats that are hybridized with men or other supernatural creatures? There's a possibility, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today too. Cats are actually the most common pet in the world. Since the beginning of human civilization, cats have been companions to people. That's an interesting line. I don't know if that's necessarily true as far as companions to people, because that happened a little later with Egyptian culture as far as being documented. But I guess beginning of human civilizations, there are some talk even in Sumerian cultures of cats, but we'll find that the Sumerians didn't have this crazy affinity to cats. They had a crazier affinity with dogs. And I find it fascinating that cats, as being spiritual beings, as being revered, as being domesticated partners to humans, didn't really surface until Egyptian culture. Which I think is crazy, right? But we do know that cats have been around for a long time. In what format, we're not really sure. Now, obviously, I'm not a big proponent on evolution, and you'll know that from me talking on this show. Again, if you're into evolution, that's cool. That clearly means you don't have a belief system in God, or you are part of the cosmology that believes that God created the Big Bang and then let everything evolve afterwards, which I've heard both of those theories. I'm not a proponent of that. However, I am a proponent of old Earth, and I do think that adaptive evolution has definitely happened for sure. So we've seen that with plenty of animals that, you know, end up having webbed feet, or their makeup changes because of the environment that they're in. You know, even cats, dogs, we don't know what was on Noah's Ark after the deluge, right? We think there was one of every kind. So obviously there wasn't a bunch of different domesticated cats and dogs that were on this. It was probably some sort of wolf. And then from that wolf, we had adaptive evolution, which obviously breeding afterwards, we had different genetic spinoffs from this original source. And we can get into what was actually on the Ark. Was there DNA on the Ark, which I've heard that argument before too. We won't get into that today, but we will get into cats and where they might have come from, what the modern house cat is a derivative of, since Egyptian culture is where it really came to the forefront. Now, we were just talking about the Middle East and Sumeria. So just recently, researchers discovered that in the Mesopotamian region in Turkey and on the Mediterranean island of Cyprus, cats were living among people thousands of years before they existed in Egypt. Now, this is recent because we thought before that Egypt was the source for domesticated cats. We've just recently found out that there were cats on the island with people. Now, there's no evidence that they were domesticated. We just know from very, very few skeletons that were found that there were some there. We don't really know the context of what they were. Now, Africa is another one. The ancient Egyptians began domesticating the African wildcat as early as 4,000 years ago. In ancient Egypt, people believed that cats were magical, divine, and godlike. In fact, ancient Egyptians worshipped a feline goddess named Bastet, who was depicted as half feline, half woman. Now, we're going to get into some of these feline gods and goddesses of different cultures later on, because they will play into this theory of DNA manipulation, what the house cat came from, and were there hybridized versions of these cats? And I think there's a possibility for sure that there could be as we go through this. We know that Asia, around 3000 BC, people of China begin to domesticate the leopard cat and Western wildcat for pest control. And you know the little cat with the little arm that does this. So we know that cats meant good luck in Chinese culture. Europe, throughout the Middle Ages, they actually considered cats demonic and associated them with darkness and witchcraft. So here's that correlation between Wicca and cats. And they actually were exterminating cats in Europe during the Middle Ages, which is absolutely insane. This is part of that, you know, back in, was it 1980s, satanic panic. You know, this is very similar to that, where you've got this overarching Christian church structure, which I don't agree with, that legalistic church structure that considered cats evil, an animal evil. So they just started wiping them out, which I think's ludicrous, but it's a part of history. North and South America also had cats, but they came from North and South America from European settlers. So at the time, there wasn't these domesticated cats. They were actually brought there. Now we're going to get into some of the weird stuff. I want to talk about some crazy theories, and then we'll get into some of the more history of the gods and goddesses and what I think could possibly be fallen angels and these Anunnaki, which I do believe were fallen angels, and what they may have DNA manipulated cats to do or be, and what they serve a purpose doing now. And I think that'll be very interesting. But I do want to talk about this theory that cats were given to us by aliens. Now, this is a big theory that's been going around, that they were spliced with reptilian blood, that they were brought to us by draconians or gray aliens. We do know that in Egypt, that the cat became a huge spiritual thing of significance in that culture. The thought pattern is, according to these conspiracy theories, is there's no documentation before ancient Egypt that mentions the existence of cats. And in ancient Egypt, they were worshipped as gifts from the gods. Now, that's a very interesting thing, because we do know that Egyptian culture had some of the wildest technology known to man, and actually unknown to man, but I say known to man because when we look at the things that were built in Egypt, we can't even do that now. So obviously there was something, some sort of technology, whether you want to think it's Nephilim that helped them build it, whether you want to think it was some sort of technological device that helped them build it, whether it was using parts of your brain that we can't access now, whatever that is, we know that Egypt was highly advanced. Now, for them to say that cats were given to them as gifts from the gods, it starts to make you think, like, who are these gods? Now, in my opinion, in the cosmology that I follow biblically, the gods were one of two things. They were either this Elohim, part of these this divinity of gods that's right underneath Yahweh or Jehovah, whatever you like to use as a reference to God, or they were fallen angels, part of the one-third of angelic kind that left heaven, the dimensional space of upper-tier heaven. And when they did, they came down to earth, and obviously they were corrupting things. We know they are corrupting animal kind. We know that they were corrupting humankind, plant life, a lot of different things that have been said in the Bible and apocryphal scripture. So we do know this, at least from text, that this was a thing going on. Now, whether you believe that or not, that's up to you, but we're going to talk about it in that context of biblical cosmology. And as with several of these premises, the propositions are mostly true, but also somewhat disputable, which I said earlier, it has been proven that in Mesopotamia, in Sumerian culture, that cats did exist. They talk about cats, and I'll talk about this later on in this episode. Cats were talked about, but they weren't revered. There were no cat gods, which is crazy because all other cultures have cat gods, have some sort of hybridized cat god that Sumerians did not have. However, Sumerians did have dog-headed gods, did have dog gods, which I think is very interesting when you look at this weird dynamic, because Sumerian culture is said to be the earliest known writings. I believe that the original Sumerian culture was predated Adam, which was in old earth when you had these angelic civilizations, when these Anunnaki were ruling for thousands and thousands of years, which is documented in the King's List. So we do know that. Now, people want to point to Sumerian culture pre-BC, after Adam, as a time period that's when it happened. I think there were two Sumerian cultures, in my opinion. I think it's documented that the old culture was before a flood, which I think was at least the flood before the deluge, right? I think there were at least two floods that we know about. I think there was a flood before Adam. I'm not going to go deep down the rabbit hole of old earth today. I've done several podcasts that are floating around out there about that, and I'll do that in the future, maybe another episode on old earth. But back to this Sumerian correlation with cats, they don't talk about it that much. It's in their writings, but it's not a part of their culture, which maybe they just like dogs better, but I do think that there is a super spiritual significance to both of these cultures. Now, one of the things about Egyptians were that exporting domestic cats was actually illegal per the Egyptians. As a matter of fact, they would kill you if you got rid of a domesticated cat because they were considered to be of the gods. They were considered to be divine. Now, just looking at skeletons is basically impossible to say when cats stopped being wild and started being domesticated. So we don't know really that domestication process, but we do know in Egypt is the first known documentation of domesticated cats. So there's something to it. If you've got a culture that's saying these are from the gods, they were gifted to us from the gods. Well, what is that? What does that actually mean? Were they literally given to them by fallen entities or Elohim as a gift to them to help them in their spiritual connectivity? It's a possibility. Now, back to the alien idea, because we're going to follow this real quick as far as what people are saying about cats. It's out here in the conspiratorial world. Another thing that's baffled by science is a cat's purr. They cannot determine how the sound is produced. We know that cougars and smaller cats, bobcats, ocelots, lynxes, and house cats can purr, but they can't roar, and that's a fact. It is true that cats possess no special organ for purring, but science does know a little bit about it, right? A rhythmic, repetitive neural oscillator in the brain actually sends messages to the laryngeal muscles, causing them to twitch at a rate of 25 to 150 vibrations per second. This causes a sudden separation of the vocal cords during both inhalation and exhalation, the unique feline vibrato. It's basically opera singing for cats, is what they say that it is. Now, what's interesting about purring with cats, it's kind of a learned behavior, because a cat that's deaf generally doesn't purr because they need to hear it either from other cats or they need to be able to hear what they're producing to create a bigger sound. I can tell you this is an absolute fact because I have an older cat now. And when he was younger, he didn't know how to meow and he didn't know how to purr. It was like when he would try to meow. And when he purred, it was super quiet. It really wasn't like it is now. But the more he watched the other cats, he actually started mimicking them and copying them. And I think that's a lot of what cats do. But back to what conspiracy theorists say is there's not a definitive reason why cats purr or how they purr. Outside of what I just told you that science says, they still haven't figured out exactly how they do it. And that's what conspiracy theorists are saying, that the cat's purring mechanism comes from aliens. I don't know, guys. I just think there's bigger cats that purr, right? There's larger cats. Cheetahs purr. They don't roar. They purr. I don't know, right? I don't think so. That's just my personal opinion on that one. If you hold a cat's ears back and describe what you see, it is a perfect match to the classic gray alien with its almond-shaped eyes, small mouth, and small nose. I mean, I don't know about that, guys. I think there's a lot of stuff out there that looks like gray aliens. I've got a bald head. You know, I could probably pass as a gray alien if I shaved my beard off and stood in the dark because I have alabaster skin. So it's a huge possibility that people can think I came from a gray alien, which they're humanoid. So gray aliens look like a lot of things. So I don't really buy that one either. A cat can see exponentially better than humans, making it appear that it must be more advanced, evolutionary speaking. Okay, this is where we get into the DNA splicing part that people talk about with domesticated cats. So not all animals have circular pupils. Large cats do, by the way, have big circular pupils like humans do. Domesticated cats, smaller cats have slits or ovals, which they'll kind of grow. If you'll notice a cat when they see something, they'll kind of grow very similar to crocodiles, vipers, cats, and foxes, which is really the only other mammal that has that. So cats and foxes are two types of mammals that have that slit. Crocodiles, vipers, reptilians have the slit. And I think that's where people get this idea that cats have been spliced with reptilians or some sort of reptile because they have these eyes that are different than all other cats. Maybe, you know, maybe that was part of this DNA splicing process back in Egypt that created this hybridized version of a cat that could see into the spiritual realm, see interdimensionally, which I don't doubt that cats can, and I will get into this later on what I think cats can do, but I do think the animal kind in general can see interdimensionally on some levels, maybe cats more than others, maybe reptiles more than others, maybe that's where this reptilian thing comes from. I don't know. It's a possibility. I'm not going to say that it's not. That is one of the most interesting parts about cats and maybe this hybridized idea is the slitted eyes. Now, people go to the nth degree. They say that their eyes are actually alien cameras and they were courting us to beam back the actions to gray aliens that put them here. I don't know, guys. That's one that I'm just not really on. And as far as them having better eyesight than us, they do have rods instead of cones in their eyes, right? It is responsible for providing black and white images, but it makes it crucial for them seeing at night. So to say that cats can see better than us at night, I agree with. As a whole, I don't know. That's one of the ones that's kind of out there, maybe. But if we're talking about spiritual realm, highly possible, because we do know plenty of stories of cats being able to see things that aren't there, but we also know other animals do that too. So that is where we are at with the alien part of it. So if you think that cats came from aliens, maybe if you think aliens and the gods are the same thing, that's a bigger possibility. I think that the gods or fallen entities or Elohim, plural, are the Anunnaki, are aliens, are what's being presented. So you're not wrong to say aliens. I mean, it's kind of the same thing in my opinion on what that is. I just think my cosmology is a little different than some people that would follow the Sumerian or Anunnaki cosmology when we're talking about Nibiru and going down that rabbit hole. I look at it more from a biblical angle than one of those particular cosmologies. Not to say that I throw what those cosmologies say out the window at all, because they all have great pieces of information that help build this greater narrative of what we're trying to remember from the past, what we're still trying to discover. So we're going to get into cat gods, and we'll talk about different cultures, but mainly Egypt, because Egypt is where these cat gods reign supreme. So the cat gods in Egypt, they were represented in social and religious scenes dating as early as 1980 BC. Several ancient Egyptian deities were depicted and sculptured with cat-like heads such as Mafdet, Bastet, and Sekhmet, representing justice, fertility, and power, respectively. The deity Mut was also depicted as a cat in the company of a cat, and they were also praised for killing snakes, rodents, birds, anything that damaged crops. That was part of the reason that they liked having cat arounds, not just for the spiritual aspect, but they killed small rodents, which a lot of people have cats for now, especially people that live on farms or have acreage. They don't want mice and stuff coming in the house, which you'll see more of. Now, we'll get into a few of these cat gods. We've got Mafdet was the first known cat-headed deity in Egypt during the first dynasty. She was regarded as a protector of Pharaoh's chambers against snakes, scorpions, and evil. So we just talked about the reptilians. We talked about the reptiles. We got scorpions, which are considered evil in Egypt. So the Mafdet, this cat god, protected Pharaoh's chambers. Often depicted with the head of a leopard or a cheetah, and she was particularly prominent during the reign of Den. We also have the deity Bastet, is known from at least the second dynasty onwards. At the time, originally, she was depicted with a lion head, and we're going to talk about these lion men in Egypt and in biblical times. We'll talk a little bit about that today, too, because I think that correlates to genetic manipulation. So we've got the lion-headed Bastet. Then later in the third dynasty, she was actually depicted with a more modern domesticated cat head. So she went from this lion-headed godhead to a more domesticated cat head, which I think is important because I'm going to talk about a stretch biblically where I think that these lion-headed men and women, these lion-headed tribes, and then all of a sudden those died off, and then you had this domesticated cat that came along. So I think there might be a correlation there. We'll dig through that today for sure. Now, we do know that there were absolutely tons of cat skeletons and cat mummies found in Egypt. I mean, we're talking like 300,000 plus, and we'll get into a little bit of that as we go too, but I think that's very important that they were mummifying these cats as a part of a spiritual ritual to go into the afterlife with them. Pharaohs did it. Just the average person did it. You could just be a peasant, quote unquote. In Egyptian culture, you were mummifying your cat too because your cat was a astral protector, essentially. So we'll get into that too. I think that's pretty important. Now we'll talk about Bastet, the deity Bastet from the 22nd dynasty around the mid-950s BC. Her temple in the city of Bubastis grew in popularity. She was later shown with a small cat head. So this is when the small cat head showed up, was in the city of Bubastis. And we'll get to Bubastis here too. I'm just giving you an overview of these two cat goddesses because they were very important in Egyptian culture, more important than some of the others. Now, during the Hellenistic period between 323 and 30 BC, the goddess Isis became associated with Bastet and cats, as indicated by an inscription at the Temple of Edfu. Isis is the soul of Bastet. In this period, cats were systematically bred to be killed and to be mummified as sacrifices to the gods. So at this point, Egyptians were actually sacrificing these cats to the gods. So you had a switch from them revering them, which they still did, but this was a huge sacrifice because if the gods asked for it, they sacrificed these divine beings essentially and then mummified them to be protectors in the afterlife. So they were literally killing them to do that, but this is when you've seen that switch between Bastet from before, then all of a sudden the goddess Isis takes on board this embodiment of Bastet, which I think is very interesting when you get to Isis, because this tracks back to the goddess Astarte, which I believe that the Nephilim worshipped was a fallen entity, which Astarte trickled down into Ishtar, which is the Babylonian goddess, and then that became this Isis. So I think this Astarte, Ishtar, Isis was this one central fallen entity or Elohim that all these different cultures worshiped because it was a derivative of each other, which I think's interesting that Isis is associated with Bastet. You have this lion-headed goddess who changes into this other domesticated form head, and then Isis becomes associated with that correlation of cats. So here you have this Isis figure, which some people think that the bloodline of Isis is this matriarchal Nephilim bloodline that has trickled down throughout all of these different bloodlines of royalty. And here you have this cat-headed goddess who's representative of that. Again, this happened later on down the Egyptian line when Isis became associated with Bastet. But I thought that was pretty interesting when I ran across that. Pretty cool too. Now, we were just talking about excavation of cats and how many cats that were found that were part of these cultures. Now, we've got the Egyptian Exploration Society. They funded excavations in Bubastis in the late 1880s, accounted for numerous cat statues, and they found 200,000 mummified animals, most of them cats, and they were found in the cemetery of Beni Hassan in central Egypt. So we know that just in this one place, that 200,000 animals were mummified as part of taking them to the afterlife, and most of them are cats. So again, Egypt revered cats for some odd reason, and they had a lot of cat goddesses. Now, we'll go a little bit deeper into some of these goddesses. We were just talking about Mafdet, and Mafdet defended Ra from threats during his daily voyages. She would hunt by night and ensure the coming of dawn. So Mafdet would be the protector of Ra during the nighttime. And this kind of plays into the domesticated cat being a nocturnal animal moving in silence at night. Some people think that when they sleep, they're actually moving around in the astral realm. That's why they sleep so long, because they're actually transporting their astral body and patrolling the area that they live in, protecting the people that they are with, which I think is a very interesting concept, especially when we start talking about astral projection, astral dreams. And I don't know if you guys have ever listened to Vicky Joy, and she's been on tons of podcasts at this point, but she talks about demonic entities, fallen entities trying to trick us or make us do blood oaths in the astral realm while we're asleep in our dreams. So I think it's very interesting that here's this idea that cats are able to astrally project as just a part of their DNA makeup. And when they are solidified in a place that the people who take care of them, they protect in this other realm, which I think is very interesting, because I can even talk about personally about dreams I've had where weird things were happening and then my cats were in there and then things dissipated. So I'm not saying that it's true or not true. I just think it's interesting concept that this could be a possibility that cats are able to move around in this other dimension. And I don't see why not, because animals throughout history have been able to do things that we don't understand. Why wouldn't they be able to do things also in these other realms? I think it's very interesting. We'll get to Bastet again as well. She is a goddess of ancient Egyptian religion, worshipped as early as the Second Dynasty, which you talked about earlier. She was worshipped in Bubastis in Lower Egypt, originally as the lion goddess, which we talked about. And it was also a role that was shared by Sekhmet, which was also another cat goddess. So later on, she was depicted as the daughter of Ra and Isis and the consort Ptah, and whom she had a son, Mahes. And Mahes is important because that's one of the lion gods that we're going to talk about, one of these lion men that we're going to get into here in a minute. But obviously, she was having children that were half lion, half god or human or whatever, right? But during this period of time, she moves into this regular cat-headed form, right? Out of the lioness form that she originally had. So she moves into this other form. And they think that part of the reason they moved the head from the lioness head into this other form was because of her being the goddess of pregnancy and childbirth, which they think the fertility of a domestic cat, the way they're able to multiply like crazy, is a part of that. Now, we talked about her first showing up and the time period that she shows up in the third millennium BCE. She's depicted as the fierce lioness or woman with the head of a lioness. And this is important because we're going to talk about how this correlates to the biblical side of things. So we're going to get to Bastet when she was the lion-headed goddess. And this is in 2890 BC. So this is long before she moved to that domesticated form that we were talking about earlier. But this correlates biblically to these lion men. So you've got the chronology of Moses, who was born in 1653 BC. So this is during that time of those lion-headed men, lion-headed goddesses. He probably saw some of this. This is just to give it a context because, you know, Moses, when he left Canaan to go to the promised land, it was all during this period of time. So I get to that because David was after that. David reigned from about 1000 to 962 BC. Now, the interesting thing about David, there is scriptural verses of David's mighty men, Benaiah, hunting down lion men of Moab. So we know that lion men were running around at this point. So were they a derivative of this lion-headed goddess, this Bastet? Now we know biblically that David and by proxy, Benaiah, who was one of his mighty men, actually killed two lion-like men of Moab. So we've got Benaiah, who's known for going to a pit on a snowy day and killing a lion and for killing powerful Egyptian men, the lion men, in 2 Samuel. Now, 2 Samuel 23:20, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, he slew two lion-like men of Moab, and he went down also and slew a lion in the midst of the pit in the time of snow. Now, this is for some people that are just now following me because I have talked about this particular verse before on several Nephilim episodes, but I think it's important when we're talking about these hybridized lion men. So when he slew these two lion-like men of Moab, lion-like men stands for Ariel in the Hebrew. Now, Ari stands for lion, and El means godlike. So we know biblically that these lion-like men were of the gods. So it's not a stretch to say that Bastet was some sort of hybridized Nephilim or could have been a cherubim, which the cherubim were said to have four different heads, the head of an ox, the head of an eagle, or some sort of fowl, the head of a lion, and the head of a man or humanoid. So it's said that the cherubim could shapeshift. So possibly they shapeshift into a lion man form or lion woman form. And that's what Bastet was, which I kind of lend more to maybe the fallen angel or Elohim version of that. It's a huge possibility. But I bring all this up about David and the mighty men because around that period of time that David and the mighty men are running around killing these things, that's around the time that Bastet changes from this lion-like goddess into the domesticated cat form. So I almost wonder if these lion-like men or women or whatever, these hybrids were getting killed off. And I wonder if that's why it changed into this domesticated cat form, because that didn't exist anymore, or they were going into hiding and it wasn't part of the culture anymore. Just a thought of mine. Not really sure about that one, but I do like it because I noticed the time placement of when they started disappearing was when David and the mighty men were running around exterminating a lot of these Nephilim and a lot of these hybrids, these cryptids that were running around at the time. So very interesting stuff. We do know that lion-like gods popped up everywhere in all cultures, not just in Egypt, because we talk about several goddesses there, but also in Babylon, we got Nergal, which was also representative of a lion-like being. So here's this other culture that has this lion-like goddess. We got Indian cat deities. We got Dewan, which was a sacred tiger. A little bit different than the lion-like stuff. We also got Japanese gods as well, like Kasha. Oddly enough, again, back to this culture that did not seemingly have any cat deities was the Mesopotamian culture. These Anunnaki, there were none. Now, we had plenty of gods that were dogs. We've got Gula, which was said to exterminate demons. In Sumerian culture, we have this demonic entity called Lamashtu, and basically Lamashtu would come after your children, try to kill your babies. So the Mesopotamians would call upon Gula and her dogs. Now, Gula was, among other things, the goddess of healing and dogs. She's either depicted with a dog at her side or as a dog herself. So we have this popping up consistently in Mesopotamian culture. No cats, though. So we're back to this other cultures after Egyptian culture all had these cat gods, these lion gods. And I'm wondering if there is some validity to the fact that there was some sort of DNA manipulation that either created or adjusted some of these cats that were in the area at the time, these wild cats, and created this domesticated house cat to be able to see into this astral realm, to be able to move around in this astral realm to help people spiritually. Now, I'm not saying necessarily for good, because I think if we're looking at negative entities that are creating something, they're probably trying to lead people into a false sense of security, trying to lead people down a wrong path. But you know my take on good Nephilim. You know my take on things being adjusted or manipulated from God's personal creation. I don't think those things are necessarily inherently evil. I think that they can be used for evil, and possibly initially, especially if they're around entities that are evil, they're going to have a hard time doing something good. But I think animals, like anything, can be trained. And I think cats could be one of those animals that, depending on who has them, they are trained in a certain way. I don't think that when something's born, it's inherently evil. I don't care if it comes from an evil source or manipulated from an evil source. And you know my take on Nephilim and how I think that there were good Nephilim, even biblically, that made their own decision for themselves. I don't think God puts that on you. I don't think there's some mark on you that makes you inherently evil and you can't ever be redeemed. But animals are a little different. I don't look at it the same way. I just think it's more about training. Right? I think animals can be trained a certain way. They could have been created from an evil source or manipulated from an evil source, but that doesn't mean that they are inherently bad. Now, to the point of that, biblically, we can go to Genesis 50:20, and it says, "As for you, what you intended against me for evil, God intended for good, in order to accomplish a day like this to preserve the lives of many people." Now, this is Joseph's story, Joseph of many colors, who ends up, ironically, we're talking about Egypt, ends up ruling second place, second under Pharaoh in Egypt, and he ends up helping his brothers who basically sold him into slavery and thought he was good as dead, and he rose to second in Egypt. And this is him telling his brothers after he reveals himself that who he is their brother, and said, "What you intended for me was evil, but God intended for good." And I think it's a great verse that we can use for a lot of things in life. What people intend is evil. What these entities intend is evil. God can use as good. The outcome can be used as good. So I think that holds true with Nephilim, holds true with animal kind that have been manipulated, all kinds of things. It doesn't mean that we can't understand where these things come from. And yes, they were manipulated and they were created to be used for evil purposes. But that doesn't mean that, especially when it comes to something like a Nephilim or a hybrid that has intelligence, like they wouldn't have a choice. I think God would give them a choice. Now, as far as animals go, I just think it's the environment they're in. If you teach them to do evil things, they will. But if you teach them to do good, they can. And I think that holds true even with domesticated cats, if we take on board the idea that they could be some sort of DNA manipulated creation of fallen entities during Egyptian culture. Now, again, we know that cats have been around far, far before Egyptian culture. We just know that the domestication of them that we know of happened in Egypt, and the domesticated cat has characteristics that are different than big wild cats. So there's something that happened there. We don't know exactly what. If you want to think it's evolution and it's the evolutionary scale and it's how it happened, cool. I just tend to think that there's a big disruption of the DNA gene pool of cats in that period of time. And we know that there were all kinds of gods and goddesses that I think that were definitely visible to these cultures, these ancient cultures. They saw them. They worshiped them. They were there. Whether you want to think they were of the divine council, these Elohim, or they were fallen entities masquerading as god and goddesses, or Nephilim that were masquerading as god and goddesses, all those things could be true. And you don't think that they would be creating or manipulating God's creation to create other beings that could help them in their purpose. It doesn't mean that those animals or creatures couldn't have been also repurposed for good. And maybe the domesticated cat was. And I think that there is definitely some good evidence for that. We were just talking about these lion men and these cat men. I mean, there's definitely some cryptids that are running around right now. We got the Wicomico Catman in Maryland that was seen in the 1980s. Four individuals saw this cat running up on them. They said it was a rare genetic mutation that went awry. They do think it was some sort of government manipulated entity. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with some things that are going on behind the scenes of the government and fallen entities. If that relationship exists, I think it's a possibility. There are several other cat-like creatures. We've got the Wampus cat, which is also known as the Wampus Beast or Cherokee Death Cat. It's a large panther-like creature in American folklore. Sometimes it's even said to be half cat, half dog, but in some cases, people say that has man-like qualities. It was said to be bipedal and the size of a Maine Coon. So Maine Coons are big, but they're huge. So there's a possibility that this is some sort of bipedal version of a Maine Coon. But then there's other varying reports about the Wampus Cat, and they're a lot bigger. So here's just a couple cryptids that are running around now or have been said to have been seen in the last 30 to 50 years that also play into this hybridization. I think that maybe they're either derivative of those times, these lion-like men or these cat men that went into hiding, that maybe they kept reproducing, you know, in secret, or they are more genetic manipulations that are going on now. Yeah, I think it's a possibility either way. But to say that the domesticated cat could be a genetic manipulation during the Egyptian culture, I think there is some validity to it, because we're looking at what spawned out of that. They're very different, vastly different than what they were originally. And the fact that the Egyptians looked at them as spirit guides, they looked at them as being able to transverse these spiritual realms or astral projection or interdimensionally, which I think is also very interesting too. And we know that these cat-like goddesses were protecting Ra from snakes and venomous animals. Now, some people think they could be reptilians that they were fighting. That may be a possibility. I'm not saying it's not. Either way, there's been varying reports of people who have woken up and thought they saw their cat sitting in an area looking at something. And when they looked down, the cat was still sleeping on them. So they were looking at the astral projection of their cat, who, again, could be warding off negative entities. I know some people's thought pattern is, well, what if they were created from a negative space? Why would they be fighting off negative entities? Again, it's an animal. So they're protecting you because you're their person. So they're protecting you from whatever is going on around you. It could happen. Why wouldn't animals who doggedly, pun intended, protect us in the real world, also be able to protect us in this other realm? And I think it's a big possibility with cats. I thought this would be a fun episode for you guys to listen to. I love cats, and I like the idea that cats are also astral protectors. But again, coming from a biblical angle, we're not here to worship cats. We're not here to put them on a pedestal or pray to them or you know, use some sort of form of a cult with them to connect them to this other realm, because then you're putting them in danger as well. I think you just let them do what they do naturally. You don't get into that part of it. You might can understand it. Maybe we look into it to understand those type of things, but it's not to work in some sort of manner that I think would be against the laws of nature, the laws of God. My personal opinion, you're more than welcome to do what you feel like you need to do. And saying all that, thanks again, guys, for being with me again this week. I had another blast on my second episode with you guys. It was a lot of fun talking about astral cats and what they might be able to do, talking about lion men, cat women, all these different interesting things throughout history, especially Egyptian culture. Hope you guys had a blast. If you like the show, go and give me a 5-star review. Go write a review on Apple. I know how many people are following me right now after a week, and I know every single one of you could go and spend 30 seconds to write a review, to give me a 5-star review, to help run it up for the algorithms. Go to Spotify, give me a 5-star. If you're listening to me on Spotify, go give me a 5-star. You can go write on each episode, and I'll see it, and obviously I'll try to interact with everyone every week and pull out some of the best reviews. I'll try to go through them as I can. You guys are already barreling me all over the place with them. Go to YouTube. Give me a good comment. Give me a like. Subscribe if you're not subscribing. Go to Rumble. Like, subscribe. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're on YouTube only, you won't get every episode, because there'll be some episodes that will not be YouTube ready. YouTube won't accept it. Because of the subject matter that I'll be talking about, you're going to need to subscribe to Rumble if you want to see the video. If not, you can listen to me on any platform. Rumble has an app now. Go get the app. It's very easy. Go get the app and follow. If you're just following for this podcast, awesome. In saying that, guys, I love you. This has been awesome. Let's continue this train, right? Let's continue this train of positivity and what we're trying to do in the conspiratorial world now. We're trying to connect to other people. We're not trying to get lost down the rabbit hole. You know, all my free range rabbits out there, FRRs, I see all you guys. We are literally free range in this thing. We're not going to stay down the rabbit hole. We're going to get out in the world. We're going to connect to people. We're going to have a good time. That's another thing. Go out there and have a good time. And like I like to end it every single podcast, go outside and touch grass and get your tail out the hole.
Thought my old motto was a VA. I was working four cylinders to death. Put it on me, no teammate. Dreams running on fumes, no rest. You could bargain for my soul for a mansion and a couple billboards, no less. Yeah, thank God for a couple roadblocks. I don't know if I'd have stopped where the road ends. Spent years looking for the real me. Always came up missing. On the sidelines, trying to be the highlight, but under the bright lights, breaking all the guidelines. Yeah, Mr. Bold with no lifelines. Yeah, screaming, I don't need you. Fighting, but I'm free too. Neon lights make a path for my breath, like smoke in the cold every weekend. Spend years looking for the real me, always came up missing. Yeah, try to find it at the bottom of the bottle, and I promise ain't sipping.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.